Hey everyone, it's Wednesday and time for a new Narration by George podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. I'm George Taylor with you today for podcast number 39. Well, Thanksgiving has come and gone, bet you're still full of turkey. I don't eat turkey, so I don't have that problem. Maybe you got some shopping in for the holiday. Maybe you're still looking at cyber deals, since it seems that Cyber Monday is being extended at a lot of websites. Well, at Narration by George, we don't do Cyber Monday. We have Cyber December. That's right. The whole month of December is a time of giving right through New Year's Day. The specials and giveaways haven't ended here at all. In fact, we are just beginning. So let me run them down for you. First, everyone has access to a great little Christmas story called A Christmas Miracle. Author and actress Donna Patton narrates this story for us. I help a little as well. You can listen to the story for free from my website. Go to narrationbygeorge.com/holiday giveaway and click on the book for access to the story. Secondly, everyone has access to a new story every day from Joni Heilman's book, Miracles, 32 True Stories. These are stories which will encourage and uplift you as you watch how God works in the lives of people just like you and me. Every day in December, a new story is available for you to listen to or to download and enjoy. Go to my website, narrationbygeorge.com/miracles, to get to that book. You can even find it on YouTube on the Narration by George YouTube channel. And finally, I'm giving away a book a day from my regular collection of books. To get your book, you only have to tell me that you want the book. Send me a message. Yes, I want a book. I'm watching Facebook, Twitter, and my email for those messages which are coming in. And the winner of the day gets to select one book from my collection to enjoy for free. So send me a message. Get your name in the hat. Send it to Narration by George. That's on Facebook. Or go to @NarrationByGeo on Twitter. Or you can contact me through my website, narrationbygeorge.com. Click on the contact link to send me the message. So what about these freebies that I'm offering? What do they sound like? Samples of the books are on each of the pages, but let me share two samples with you, and then we'll close with a little surprise at the end of the podcast. One of my favorite books to produce was the Nighthawk series. This is actually two books. Jerry Minshew penned these two books, Nighthawk and Nighthawk Vanishing Shadows, about a boy who was kidnapped as a baby from his home in Minnesota. He was raised in Alabama and ultimately joins the Air Force to travel and find his family. Along the way, we see the adventures that he's a part of, the people who become his adopted family, both in and out of service, and experience an amazing event that transforms him into a superhero. Yeah, I said superhero. How does that happen? Well, you've got to hear the story. Take a listen to this sample.
Coming to Audible.com, Amazon.com, and in the iTunes Store, A Tale.
Michael said, "Just tell me that it isn't true." Teresa said, "I'm afraid that it is true. I know that we should have told you before now. We're both sorry that you had to hear it from someone other than us."
Matthew added, "Folks around here never blamed you for what your parents did. After a while, folks just stopped talking about it, and it became easier for us just to put it off till some other time. I guess we waited too long."
A tale of yearning for family.
Matthew put his hand on Michael's shoulder and said, "My people have always believed that for a man to know his destiny, he must first know his past. My people have a rich heritage. I can't imagine what it must be like to know nothing of your past. But I do know this. One day you will leave us, When you do, you will carry these items down the path that you will walk. Perhaps they will lead you to the answers that you seek.
A tale of searching for identity.
I was raised in a foster home. I've never met anyone who is related to me. No brothers, no sisters, no cousins, no aunts or uncles, and no grandparents. Before I leave here, I'm hoping to find out who I am and where I'm from. I'd sure like to find my family if I have one. So what's with the shoebox? It's one of the few things that my parents left. It's led me to believe that they lived around here, like the church bulletin that I showed you. The only ID that it has is St. Ignatius, Los Angeles, California. I also have their marriage license. They were married here in Los Angeles. He opened the shoebox and took out the seashell. And this seashell probably came from the beach around here. What the significance of it is, I don't know.
A tale of love and friendship.
After several dances, Michael and Janice walked back to the sidelines to join their friends.
You're a good dancer, Janice complimented him.
I was raised by Indians and we did rain dances every summer for the crops.
Okay. Did they teach you how to bowl, too?
Actually, no. We didn't have a bowling alley on the reservation. Frank stepped forward and said, I know how to bowl. Glancing at his nameplate over his pocket, Janice asked,
And what is your first name, Airman Baker?
Airman Frank Baker, from Phoenix, Arizona, at your service, ma'am.
Well, Frank, why don't you and the rest of the guys come with us and we can teach Michael how to bowl?
That wasn't quite what Frank had in mind.
Okay.
After a twisted smile, he glanced at Michael, who was beaming from ear to ear. After a couple of hours in the base bowling alley, Greg said, Guys, I hate to throw a wet towel on a good party, but we do have to be back at the barracks before lights out at 2100 hours. Janice said, I guess you guys better go. I don't want to be responsible for you getting into trouble. Looking directly at Michael, she asked,
Do you have time to walk me to my barracks?
Absolutely. I found that you have to make time for the important things in life. Turning to his buddies, he said, I'll meet y'all back at the barracks. Henry said, Hey, we can take a hint. We know when we're not wanted. Walking down the sidewalk, Michael was relieved that they were finally alone.
A tale of unbelievable adventure.
Just then, a group of enemy soldiers who had managed to get out of the damaged buildings began to fire. Though morning was breaking, he still had the advantage of semi-darkness. His enhanced vision allowed him to see them better than they could see him. He drew his .45, dropped to the kneeling position, and emptied a magazine in their direction. He ejected the empty clip and let it fall to the ground. While reloading, he shouted at the POW, Get to the chopper, I'll cover you! The POW started limping away, and he emptied another magazine at the enemy soldiers. While reloading, he realized that someone else was firing from behind him. He looked toward the front gate and saw the two Americans with the AK-47s firing from the cover of the damaged gate. He took this opportunity to run. He caught up with a man from the pit. He put an arm around him and helped him toward the gate. One of the men with an AK-47 yelled, I'm empty! Me too, said the other. They dropped their weapons and ran to help their weak friend to the chopper. The rescuer relinquished his load, turned, and started firing again. Six enemy soldiers had decided to take advantage of the pause in weapons fire to rush the gate. The rescuer dropped three of them with his first three shots. The remaining three took cover. He emptied his remaining rounds and, while reloading, glanced at the chopper. All the POWs were there, either climbing in or being helped in. The rotors also turned. He emptied another magazine in the direction of the enemy soldiers, reloaded, and holstered his .45. He took two grenades from his vest, pulled the pins, and tossed them into the camp. By the time they exploded, he had reached the chopper and literally dove inside. One of the POWs yelled, He's in! Then promptly, Major Molloy lifted the chopper into the air.
A tale of aliens.
He started running. He had to get to his barracks, get into uniform, and report for duty. Looking back over his shoulder, he saw that the two F-4s had looped around. One of them fired a missile. He stopped running and watched. The other jet fired a missile. Then the strangest thing happened.
The target made an evasive maneuver just as the first missile appeared to have been deflected by an invisible force shield. The target made another evasive maneuver, and the second missile was deflected into the desert. Michael watched with amazement until he realized that the target had changed its course. It was now headed directly for the athletic field. He turned and ran, faster than he had ever thought possible. The adrenaline pumping through his body removed any fatigue or pain. His very life depended on getting as far away from the athletic field as possible. The last sound that he heard was what sounded like a sonic boom. He felt the force of the explosion against his body. It lifted him off the ground. The flames engulfed him in intense heat, and he lost consciousness.
A tale of an unlikely superhero.
Tim slapped him in the face and rushed back across the room to Ming's side. He grabbed her hair and yanked her head back. How about you watch me kill her? After his face was slapped, Michael closed his eyes and focused all of his attention on the ropes. He had to momentarily block Ming out of his mind. Tim screamed in anger, "Open your eyes! Look at me!" The ropes fell away and Michael's hands were free. The two guards standing to either side of him opened their mouths and eyes in amazement. Michael took advantage of their stupor. It was time to make use of the brief martial arts training he had received from Major Chow. The palm of his right hand reached out with fierce speed and force. It connected with the guard's nose. The bone cracked, and the guard fell unconscious. Michael's left foot rose and sunk deep into the second guard's stomach. He dropped his AK-47, bent almost double, and flew backwards into the wall. He fell to the floor, motionless. Tim was shocked at the scene unfolding before him. Two of his guards had already fallen, leaving two by the door. They stood in awe of what they had just seen. Perhaps this American was a demon, Tim yelled. Shoot him! Michael turned to them with both hands outstretched and eyes closed. If he was going to survive this, he had to stay focused. Before they could pull their triggers, their weapons leapt from their hands and flew through the air into the hands of this American demon. Michael caught the weapons and opened his eyes. He threw the weapons into a corner of the room. A dismayed Tim yelled, "Kill him!" The guards rushed Michael, and Tim grabbed Ming. He pulled her from the chair and threw her to the floor. He reached for his saber. Michael leapt into the air and twisted while raising his right leg straight out. His foot connected with the side of an approaching guard's face. His head spun around, neck and jawbone cracked. His limp body fell to the floor and rolled to a stop against the wall. With cat-like agility, Michael landed on the floor. He jumped again and thrust his left leg up and out. He connected with the final guard's chest. The guard flew backward across the room and out the open window. Michael landed and turned to Tim and Ming.
It's the story of Michael Weber, United States Air Force, also known as Nighthawk.
One of the challenges for this book, for producing this book, was the creation of dozens of character voices and keeping them all straight. I cannot tell you, because I don't remember, how many characters I created for this book, but it was a bunch. Take a listen. Remember, you can get it free by sending me a message, "Yes, I want a book," via Facebook, Twitter, or email. Now, in a completely different vein, the historically based novel, The Declaration of Independence, John Hancock, was an absolutely fascinating read. Helping Hands Press and narration by George ask the question posed by the Declaration of Independence series. Would you have signed? The Declaration of Independence series asks all of us that one soul-searching question. If you were rich, if signing meant defying the world's superpower, if failure meant your family would be left destitute and you would be hung by the neck with your hands tied behind your back until you strangled to death, would you have signed the Declaration of Independence? Would you have risked your privileged life so that others might live in freedom? That was the question facing John Hancock in Volume 4 of this series by Joseph Max Lewis, and in the face of overwhelming odds, he answered, yes. We must all hang together, Hancock said, before almost choking on his disastrous choice of words. Men's faces clouded. They realized they stood on the brink, but could still step back. As had so often been the case, it was Benjamin Franklin who saved him, who saved us all. Yes, we must indeed all hang together, Franklin replied in an equally loud voice. He took a moment to push his spectacles up his nose, or most assuredly we shall hang separately. The hall burst into surprised laughter. Men now smiled, grimly perhaps, but they lined up and took their turn, signing the most important document in the history of the world. Only Franklin, Hancock thought to himself. Join Hancock, Franklin, Jefferson, and the other founders on one of the most momentous days in human history, July 4th, 1776. Ladies, my apologies, I said, first kissing Dolly's cheek, then brushing Mrs. Yard's hand with my lips. Once seated, I looked around. The table is well set with a matching collection of bone-colored porcelain plates, cups, and saucers, all overlaid with hand-painted wild flowers. Today calls for a bit of extra caution. I placed one napkin on my lap and tucked a second into the front of my collar. Dolly raised a disapproving eyebrow. I'm afraid breakfast stains won't do on a day like today, I said. And that is all Mrs. Yard requires.
The entire city is abuzz, Mr. Hancock. Mr. Lee merely states the obvious, does he not? The Congress voted for independence 2 days ago, so why is there not a declaration? What explanation can one give for the recalcitrance of some members, and will it be resolved today?
Philadelphia was, of course, abuzz with the dramatic developments. Delaware's delegates deadlocked until Caesar Rodney arrived to break the tie. When Rodney heard of the impasse, though on his sick bed, dying of cancer, he arose, took to his horse, and rode from Delaware to Philadelphia, through the night, in a blistering rainstorm. Somehow, the man managed to stay on his horse and arrive late in the morning, in time to cast the deciding vote of approval that passed the resolution. Mrs. Yard, you know well it was not a few members, I said. Because, my good woman, I thought, the entire endeavor hangs by a thread, something I will certainly keep to myself. At the end of June, Richard Henry Lee of Virginia proposed a resolution for the Congress to adopt, resolved that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is, and ought to be, totally dissolved. Once it was clear that the motion would not carry unanimously, Samuel and I maneuvered to postpone the vote on the resolution. Originally, I said after a moment, we split 7 colonies to 5 on the motion, and therefore postponed the vote. Who knows what the outcome may have been if we forced the issue, my good woman, and agreed to consider the resolution on July 1 and voted for independence on July 2, if the Pennsylvania Evening Post and the Pennsylvania Gazette are to be believed, Yard replied. Then some continue their endless bickering and nitpicking.
Eggs Benedict, Mr. Hancock. Yes, quite. Right here, if you please. The eggs at least provided a temporary distraction. Mrs. Yard had a point, so I took a moment to gather my thoughts. Yard's house is popular, and thus she is a woman of some influence. How should I respond? We reopened consideration on Lee's resolution on July 1 and haggled until the vote for independence on July 2. But a vote and an actual declaration, something that will be sent to the king of the most powerful empire on earth, is an irrevocable act. Two quite different matters. I managed to work out a compromise with the members on the composition of the drafting committee and appointed Jefferson, Franklin, Adams, Sherman, and Livingston to draw up the Declaration of Independence.
In reality, Jefferson will do the writing, but everyone is satisfied their interests will be protected. I chose the others, some under duress, to satisfy the demands of various political factions. In any event, Jefferson's pen has soared. Last night I read the draft declaration, but it is the preamble that both stirs the soul and threatens disaster. All men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Mr. Hancock? Oh, forgive me, Mrs. Yard, the eggs are wonderful. My compliments yet again to the house you keep here. My pleasure, sir, Yard replied. But I hope you will forgive me if I take advantage of the fact that the President of the Congress is here, in my house, at my table, to inquire as to the future of my country. The concerns of a patriot deserve a clear answer, ma'am. I took my time with the last of the eggs. I pushed away my plate and gestured to Philip for my carriage. I hope we will see some significant progress today. The drafting committee, as you have no doubt heard, has been hard at work. I believe it will produce a document that all of us can embrace. Now, you must excuse me, I said, dropping the napkins onto my plate. I'm to open the session at 9 a.m. I hope to see you this evening for dinner, but events may prevent that. I kissed Dolly on the cheek, bowed to the formidable Mrs. Yard, and joined Philip in the hallway. Join this country's founding fathers as they ponder the question, to sign or not to sign, in the Declaration of Independence series, Volume 4, John Hancock, by Joseph Max Lewis. It's from Helping Hands Press and narration by George.com. I learned a few things about that day that I had never known and probably would never have known. Again, this is one of the books that's available on request by sending me the message, yes, I want a book. So, there are two possibilities for you, vastly different. Which one would you like to hear? Speaking of hearing, like that segue, Christmas carols and songs are always abundant this time of year, so I thought I'd share a little history about some of the carols that I find are my favorites. My most favorite carol of all time may even be yours as well. It's rated as one of the most popular Christmas carols ever. It's Joy to the World. Its exuberance spells out the meaning of Christmas, doesn't it? The coming of salvation for mankind in Jesus. Did you know Isaac Watts wrote this song? You remember him? Watts wrote many hymns that are still sung today, including another favorite of mine, When I Survey the Wondrous Cross. He based the words of Joy to the World on the last half of Psalm 98, which starts out this way, Shout to the Lord, all the earth, break out in praise and sing for joy. You can hear it in that song, can't you? The tune is by a guy named Lowell Mason, the man who started music education in American schools. And some say this tune has Handel's Messiah to lean upon to thank for some of its material. Joy to the World has been sung and performed and sung again all over the world. But here's a very straightforward choral arrangement which just lets the message shine through.
Joy to the world, the Savior reigns, but men their souls.
Well, that's the time for this podcast. Thanks for joining me for the Narration by George podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. Check back with me next Wednesday. That's when this podcast will once again be new. See you then.